Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Welcome. This is No Spin Rodeo. We're at episode number 48. My name's Tommy Joe Lucia. I'm joined by my co-host, Kendra Santos, and the man in charge of the control room, Greg Teagarden. Welcome to No Spin Rodeo. Glad to see all of you no spinners. Good afternoon, Kendra and Greg. Kendra, how is it in sunny California today?
It's overcast and a little chilly, but yesterday it looked like a beautiful spring day, but we've had a lot of frost out there too. Nothing like, you know, there are people with real weather issues all over the place, and this is not one of them.
Well, so no complaints. You can't exactly say that because you guys go from massive fires followed by massive mudslides. I mean,
yeah, but when you say you guys, you're mostly talking about people in Los Angeles, which is a whole world away from me. And I laugh, you know, David, you know, must know David Allen, yep. Who a few directors of media ahead of me was at the PRCA and then ended up working in what, race car world. But anyway, he's always cracking on Californians about, you know, moving to Montana. And I'm like, you know, gee, Skippy, he put a picture of like these, you know, his car covered to the roof in snow or something, like, hey, everybody come this way. And it's like, why would we? I mean, it's beautiful in summer, but come on now. I mean, anyway, I mean, that's, we all heckle each other. I, on the heckling front, can I say something super random? Sure. For coffee time today? Okay. Cause this, I was more than slightly offended when it's like, it's come to this. Oak gave me a vacuum cleaner for Christmas. Men, this is like putting a toilet brush in a girl's stocking. Okay. So it took me the better part of 2 months to crack that baby out last night. Cause every week, you know, I wash my sheets and I vacuum my house and, you know, do my mother proud. But here's the thing, after waiting 2 months to crack out the shark, I eat my words because they're brilliant. Because this vacuum cleaner, you know how you guys, anybody over 50, a guy has to have his fogless mirror in the shower so that he can get his rhino hairs off his nose. Okay. So this vacuum cleaner has lights.
You're just now figuring out about the shark? Are you kidding me? See, that's because you and Oat still live on wooden wheels. The shark. Well,
I've never heard of it, but I got to tell you, I got to get to the punchline for, you know, my nickname being Mary Poppins all these years and Oats all the time going, remember at the beer stand at Ellensburg? And I'm like, I was never at the beer stand. That's probably why we're together today. But I got the giggles last night as I'm tooling around and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm drunk with power. This thing goes everywhere. It can limbo under the couch and everything, everywhere else. And it's got lights and it's got a clear tank. Like there's no bags. You can see the tank and it's full of dust bunnies. And I got the giggles. I'm all by myself in my house. And I get the giggles last night because you guys know I was raised by the he-wolves, like cowboys, and only had brothers. And most of my best friends in my lifetime have been cowboys. And I thought of the age-old saying, I was saying this about my new shark vacuum, what the cowboys always said, she could suck the chrome off a trailer
hitch. Oh, boy. Well,
my vacuum cleaner could suck the chrome off a trailer hitch, and I'm so smitten with that.
Okay. Okay. Wow.
Thank you, Oat. I eat crow today in front of everybody because I I really, this is great. This is next level.
Well, Donna has like nine sharks. There's a shark in every place that needs a vacuum cleaner. They're
Wow,
the
I never
best. They're the best things. The little ones are great. They're really good. But on the Valentine's front, and then I'll let Greg do it. Couple stories. First is Donna and I made a gentleman and ladies agreement to go have dinner for Valentine's Day, which I thought excluded card and candy because it was a gentleman's agreement. She shows up that morning with cards and candy. Now, we had been snowed in Heber City, Utah, just did a skijoring event and a hunting show, and I'd been running around. And I'm like, how dare you set this on my desk? That is so completely unfair. I don't have a card nor candy. Now, the saving factor is there has been times in the past that I've gotten her a card and candy, and she didn't have a reciprocating gift. And so, but this one I heard on the radio and I could not believe it. And I got to just repeat it because it really gets you thinking. So there's a local radio celebrity somehow in sports radio, I think, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Well, God bless his soul. His father died 2 days before Valentine's Day. And he repurposed funeral flowers for his fiance. Now, there's a lot of arguments here. One of the arguments is they are his flowers. I mean, they were given to him, but he did for real repurpose them as a huge bouquet. So if that doesn't get you thinking about Valentine's Day, it's a racket anyway. I think it's just a racket anyway. I love my Valentine every day. So
Well,
true.
yeah, well, that's exactly right. If you're trying to score points on one day, you have a larger issue. But hey, if he maybe he put a lot of effort and maybe he put a little he took a lot of time to pluck this rose and make a whole new bouquet, and his all of his labor of love maybe
I
was very
wasn't present
sincere
at
and
the
touching.
funeral, but you don't see that many roses. You usually see, I don't even know the names of the flowers, lots of ivies and stuff like that. So I just can't imagine. Like, I couldn't, like, my question was, could I ever, in even my youth, have done that? I couldn't. I couldn't. No chance. I wouldn't do
Well, not with a straight. You sooner or later, it's
it.
got
Yeah,
to
I
be a
couldn't.
gruesome
Greg,
night, I
any
confess.
Valentine stories from for you?
No, I got I took care of my Valentine's on Wednesday because I was traveling on Friday. So just a big bouquet of flowers made her smile.
Yeah, flowers are important. See, I think it's important, and I said this to my boys, but women do like don't want to really be like upstepped by another woman in the office. Like, that's important that you get something in the office setting from your Valentine because, like I said, they've created a really nice racket out of it. But anyway, we're not about Valentine's here. So happy late Valentine's Day to all you people. I offered to share my chocolate with Donna, but yeah, there was that. So anyway, well, Kendra, it's been a couple of weeks. You want to catch us up on some rodeo news?
Sure, and I, here we are, Texas swing time, flashes back around quickly, doesn't it? Right after the NFR. So Fort Worth just ended. San Antonio is about in the middle as we're recording this. So as always, I just will hit a few highlights rather than rehashing all the results. But Fort Worth, since it's done, I don't know Wisconsin's Nick Pelkey, who's in the lead now for the world standings, but he won Fort Worth, and it was the first time he was ever 90, which is pretty cool. And he was 91 and a half, and he won it on Straight Stick, which is the same horse that Rocker Steiner won Fort Worth on last year, which is kind of an interesting note. Jesse Brown won the bulldogging. He was 3-6. Josie Connor and Dutch were 1-8. they won the breakaway Remy Bay a full second, which is pretty tricky to do, especially in a one-head sudden death situation. Cade Bruno has now been 92 twice on J-Bar-J's Straight Moonshine. He won Fort Worth. And got to mention Statler Wright being 91 and a half on The Black Tie, because we all love that name of that horse. But that's half a point, you know, from the win. I know second at Fort Worth is still great, but a win's a win. Anyway, Shad Mayfield. We'll talk about it again when we're talking about San Angelo, but like this guy, like, okay, so he just went, he was 7-6. He won back-to-back wins at Fort Worth now, him and Lollipop. And what's really starting to stand out is that he is taking two wraps to everybody else's one and still being faster. So that just stands on its own right there. So you're doing more steps and you're doing it quicker than everybody else, which says an awful lot about a guy who is, on sketchy hips.
Well, hold on. I wanted to comment before you leave, Chad. I was, before I went to Denver, I was in the Lipan, Texas post office. By the way, it's about a foot and a half bigger than a large doghouse. It's a very small post office, and it was a cold 30-degree windy day in Texas. And I walk in there and I look a lot like Elmer Fudd. Not really. Nobody would recognize me, but I was just doing, I don't know, I was mailing Christmas gifts or something for Pranam. And Shad's in there and I'm like, hey, dude, what are you doing? He says, hey, how are you doing? And then he sold one house there in Lipan, moved a little bit down the road. And we talked about where he lived. And I said, how you feeling? What's the winter look like? And what I thought was most interesting to me is he said his very favorite rodeo season. His favorite rodeos to go to, the stuff he looks forward to all year long, are the big winter rodeos. He said those are, you know, it sounded in the conversation like he really likes it because, you know, it gives you a chance to mentally and physically get prepared, compete at a high level against great people, and not necessarily, and again, I'm putting my own words into this, but not necessarily day in, day out, day in, day out, right? He said he loves the winter rodeos. He said, I'm going to hit the winter rodeos hard and then see how things are, is what he said. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, he also gets to sleep in his own bed when he's that close to home, which is always appreciated by a cowboy. Also of note at Fort Worth is that little buckskin horse Peso from Canada won second and fourth with Kyle Lucas and Ty Harris. That horse is showing up. He's a big deal at all the winter rodeos after being a big deal at the NFR. Because he's built for the buildings. And then third was Riley Webb, which he's always of note. The team roping at Fort Worth, this is an interesting one to me. So a new team, Tanner Tomlinson, who's young, I think he's 24 years old. He's been of huge note the last few years with Patrick Smith, who kind of put him on the map, you know, the world champion veteran. And so Patrick's, you know, taking a step back with family this year. So here comes Tanner Tomlinson, and he just won Fort Worth with another, you know, big time veteran, 40-year-old Travis Graves, who's been to the finals 14 times. Tanner Tomlinson and Patrick Smith, by the way, own the NFR record on 10. I think they set that in 2022, but pretty cool that Tanner just won this rodeo on his horse Marshall, who Fort Worth was his first rodeo back since he colicked last summer, and he's been out ever since then. And that's also the horse that Cal Fuller won the BF in 2020 when everything shut down from COVID, and the BFI was saved by the Lazy E Arena because it couldn't be held in Reno because Reno was shut down. Cal Fuller and Andrew Ward's brother Reagan Ward won the BFI in 2020 at the Lazy E with Cal Fuller riding the same horse Marshall. So I think it's pretty neat. This horse has been like a headliner, but the conditions at Fort Worth and the conditions at the BFI are like night and day. So that says a lot about the versatility of that particular sorrel horse. Anyway, Andrea Busby, who just won the NFR on her horse Benny, she won Fort Worth on the Silver and Mare she calls Derby. and they're a hot item to watch. Like they're the types that will be sweeping some things, it appears. And Maverick Potter won the bull riding 89.5 on Mr. Demon at Fort Worth. Anyway, there's so many things about Fort Worth, and I would also mention that one of the great honors of my career was at Fort Worth, and being a rodeo mom. I got to watch my kid rope at Fort Worth the same night that I got the Lane Frost Award by surprise in that arena, and they gave it to Jeff Metters this year, and I thought that was a really, really wonderful choice. So to hit a few early going notes from San Antonio, besides Rocker Steiner going blonde, if everybody's, there were a lot of public comments on his new do, but he really fought it in the first two rounds. You know, everybody goes three times in their bracket, and then the high money winners, the four high money winners advance. But it was painful to watch. And the secretary, Sunny Deb Backstrom, said he visible injured his third horse and that he needs wrist surgery. So I don't know a lot of details on that, but that's a pretty big one that we'll look for, you know, ongoing details. Chad Mayfield, again, he won two of three. He was the high money winner in his bracket. He won two of the three rounds, again, taking two wraps, trying to go back-to-back to San Antonio also. So, yeah, loving the winter rodeos for him shows. Cole Franks won the bareback riding. On Valentine's Day, back to Valentine's Day, I thought I got a kick out of he made a post like "Happy Valentine's Day to my last ever ex-girlfriend," because I guess he just got engaged. So congratulations to Cole and his new fiance Dusty. Okay, also San Antonio, Wagasback. Well, I'm crossing over on the Texas swing. What Tyler Wagasback, 5-time champ of the world, he pulled a hammy at Fort Worth. So he's able to keep going, which I kind of, Oat told me what he said, that like it's not such that he can't keep going, like what Stetson Wright got sidelined. Wag can keep going, but he's pretty gimpy, but he's going on with it. Anyway, him and his younger counterpart, traveling partner, Cash Robb, who just won his first NFR in December, they shared the victory lap in round one. That was pretty cool. But for the second straight year, Cash smoked gate man John Guatney on the victory lap. Did you see it? It was painful. And apparently it happened last year too. And gosh dang, Wag is out there laughing on the victory lap. And Randy Corley's like, quit laughing. And I mean, it's one of those things like, you know, thank goodness he's okay. But since he is okay, when people, oh my God. Anyway. Let's just move on from there. Okay. So in the team roping, Dustin Agusquiza and Levi Lord. Okay. These guys are starting to be perennial regular season team roping champs. Like they kill it all year long. And then they've gotten past, you know, the last two or three years, whatever, when they had a great shot at the world and they've been past. So they swept their bracket at San Antonio, and they were 3-5 and 3-6 in two of those three runs. So those guys are, it just seems like what they're trying to do is make it so they're trying to win so much money that nobody could pass them at the NFR, which we all know is impossible, but it's pretty cool to see them doing work like this. Anyway, cool how some of these winter rodeos have qualifiers, and this young lady named Sophie Palmore, who I've never heard of, made it in the barrel race out of the qualifier in Uvalde to San Antonio and won two of the three rounds in a very stacked set. So that's neat to see. And I think everybody agrees that it's fun, you know, that it's possible for people that are newcomers that didn't rodeo all last year for a position at these winter rodeos to have a shot. And for her to win two of three rounds is pretty dang impressive in advance now. So, I will give two brief, like prayer rallies for people in our rodeo family that I've, written more in detail on my socials, but, of note, Jeter Lawrence just went to his first NFR, 19 years old. He had a serious head injury January 25th at the last rodeo at Jim Norick Arena in Oklahoma City. He's a great kid, and he was the Grinch in the Granary at the NFR, and he's making strides, but by all accounts, it's going to be, you know, he had a very serious and called critical and everything else head injury, so a long road ahead. And another person who's on my heart right now is Turquoise Circuit steer wrestler Kyle Calloway. He's got a very scary, his brain cancer has come back. He was diagnosed a few years ago, and then, you know, he's okay, and then he's in remission, and then he's okay, you know, he's in remission, and then it comes back. And anyway, it's back, it's bad, and he's exhausted all what they would consider, you know, normal treatments. And so now he's kind of throwing a Hail Mary and going to Houston to a special place where he's going to be like on trial treatments that insurance won't cover. So I guess at minimum, if everyone just would say prayers for him and his family, his wife, Anna's a breakaway roper. They have three beautiful kids and to a mat, and he's young. And he just, in November, you know, competed and placed at the Turquoise Circuit Finals. And now he's, you know, in a fight for his life. And it's really bad. So if we can help in every possible way that we can, that would be wonderful. I feel like I'm always so proud of us when these things happen. But, you know, for us to know this many people, that these sorts of things are going to happen, very sadly, but it's just part of life. Yeah. So prayers for Kyle and also Jeter.
Yeah. Prayer is a powerful thing. And I think there's some links out there. If you have the ability to help these people financially, that's always a good thing. As long as it's going to a trustworthy source.
Well, and on that, I'm every single time something like this happens, I'm a huge proponent for direct contributions. And so I'm always kind of pressing for an actual mailing address where every penny will go to that person. And in Kyle's case, I was able to get that and post it so that there is a direct, like if you send $100, $100 goes to Kyle and Anna. So, good point, because as we all know, you know, GoFundMe is better than nothing, but they take a cut. So, and somebody, I didn't realize this, but somebody was very offended because they said GoFundMe was now asking for tips. And I don't know anything about that, but that sounds really
the GoFundMe. So is a noble cause that has been non-nobly used. So now when you see GoFundMe, it really has a negative context, I think, at least it does to me. And I don't think that's fair in all situations. It can be the only way that someone can reach out and get help. The only thing, now I look at Fort Worth and San Antonio completely different than Kendra. You all know that. Kendra can tell you the names of the horses and what they won 26 years ago. But the two things that stuck out to me this year, Fort Worth looked kind of like Fort Worth to me, watching it on the broadcast. I thought it was, and it's clean and it's a nice venue. Good competition. I thought Jim Gay did a really nice job putting together livestock for that. Yeah, that's a tough job. Binion does a good job in it's harder than all of these couch cowboys think to put together, you know, 20 something performances of livestock and not make it an unfair game, both in the timed event and in the rough stock. And now they fall short, I agree, some of the times. But what I noticed in Fort Worth was the chuck wagon wreck on the last perf. I don't know if you saw that, but I'm making a corner, wagon goes over, and the driver's injured. And the wheel horse gets underneath the set. And it just goes to show that we can't take for granted the amount of inherent danger there is in any of the activities in our sport. And so I thought that was, and I don't know what I would have done, but I think one of the teamsmen on the wagon, he ran out there and got a hold of the lead horse on a runaway, got in front of him, and then he got completely ran over, which looked like it could happen. If you grabbed a hold of the lead horse, you would probably get clobbered. And he did. I don't know the updates. I haven't heard anything terrible out of it. So I think everybody, I heard the horse was fine. And the other thing I thought was really, really, really super, super cool. Now this dates me a little bit. San Antonio did a retro bullfighter thing. And they honored Webster and those guys that do San Antonio, put on the wardrobe, the costumes of some old greats, namely Skipper Voss and Lloyd Ketchum. Now, these are guys that I grew up with. Like, so when I saw Skipper Voss's green hat out there, it was super, super cool. And for those of you that have just gotten into our sport and our industry in the last, I'd say 15 years, most of the bullfighters are all in jerseys, shorts. Some of them have makeup. Some of them, you know, they're bullfighters. But to see these guys, and I'll tell you, Webb looked a lot like Skipper, not quite as tall. And I think it was Nathan. I think it was Justice that was Lloyd Ketchum. Whoever was Ketchum was really, really looked like Lloyd Ketchum. And Skipper Voss got a standing ovation. He was in the audience and they saluted him and he got a standing ovation. And, you know, I'm probably more partial to me because I grew up with those guys. I worked the barrel with Lloyd in bullfights. Skipper was in my dad's time. So I thought that was just really, really a great idea. Hats off to San Antonio or whoever thought of that. Really cool idea. Now, Rump tried to be retro. And I'm not sure. It's very hard, I think, for Rump to dress up like anybody and look like them other than Rump. So I don't really know who he was looking like, but he did look like an old school barrel man. And there's been some flare-ups about, you know, Rump, why doesn't Rump get in the barrel? And then old barrel men want to say, why aren't they walking the barrel into the bull anymore? Listen, it's not the same as it was. So you people can get over it. It's not anything near what it used to be when barrel men were barrel men. That's not the way it is anymore. And so just take a chill pill. Rump entertains the audience and does a good job doing it. And I'm sure it is hard for Rump to get down in the barrel. I can't imagine that it wouldn't be. And then I saw a cool video, look like at maybe the Dixie National or something. They're like, you don't see this often. And it was a bull that got his head in the end of the barrel. I think it was Dusty Meyer's barrel and had it up on his head. And I thought, well, you don't see it often anymore, but I can't tell you the times when I was working the barrel that a bull got the barrel on his head. Because I know exactly what you do. You put your elbows right between his eyes and you push away while he tries to hook you in the barrel until it falls off. So that's my commentary on your very interesting and detail-laden rodeo news. So here we are with feedback. Greg, can you let her rip on feedback and we'll take a shot at answering all of our fans' questions.
Okay, right. Tommy Joe, I don't care who sanctions a rodeo. If they want big events like San Diego, the American Kid Rock, then make it easier to watch and they will grow fans. It's too hard and I'm looking. If Kendra can't...
I know what they're talking about because I said... I tried really hard to get information about San Diego and I wasn't able to. Go ahead, Tommy Joe, sorry.
Well, 502, you're absolutely right. We agree. There's not a consistent, you know, it's not consistent, right? You got to find out where you're at. We're very fragmented on the media. The Americans on Fox, now their contender tournament on Fox Sports 1, the PRCA is on the Cowboy Channel, the PBR is on CBS and all kinds of multiple streaming platforms since they parted from their other media partners. So right now you got to hunt to find it. And we agree and we'll do our best to tell you where it's at, but there's no disagreement. I'm not arguing with you, 502. I agree. Wouldn't it be nice if we could watch all these rodeos at a high level in one location, but that's not the case currently. Next one.
And 502 continues. How much longer till the PBR buys the IPRA and uses it for a feeder system for the Kid Rock and WCRA American and have an ultimate champion and the PRCA becomes the IPRA. May take 10 years from now, but with money and the path they're on. Teton could join right in.
Well, first of all, 502, and I looked it up, that's Kentucky. It's another fair question. It's somewhat confusing, but by the same token, we're even those of us on this call are somewhat confused by a lot of it, including to back up a step, you know, it's really interesting that, okay, Teton Ridge owns the Cowboy Channel, but we're looking to Fox Sports One for the American events, you know, instead of on the Cowboy Channel. You know, interesting. Maybe that's existing contracts. Maybe that's part of their plan to get it out to more mainstream. I'm not really sure. But even for us, and we are on the inside of rodeo for a very long time, to me, it's increasingly difficult to follow all of today's Western world alliances, to be fair. I mean, ultimately, you know, it always comes down to money, right, Tommy Joe? And, you know, what none of us knows right now is what the wealthy powerhouse players that are pretty new to our rodeo party are planning to do moving forward. We don't know. Or do you know? I don't know.
Well, I can tell you what I think. Now, first off, it's interesting to know that the WCRA is owned by a gentleman named Gary McKinney. He also owns the IPRA.
Okay. He also owns the Lazy Arena. Go ahead.
He owns the Lazy Arena. So they've already, Gary's already got that feeder system. Now, I haven't seen as much interweaving between the WCRA and the IPRA. There's been a little bit, as I would have thought. So it is interesting to see that the IPRA is there. But, you know, the WCRA and the IPRA, they've got their thing going. But now what's interesting, if you start to really kind of look at this, Teton Ridge buys the Cowboy Channel. Teton Ridge owns the American. They do have a contract with Fox Sports, Kendra. They're going to have to put the first airing, I'm assuming, I haven't read the contract, but the first airing of this stuff will have to go on Fox, Fox Sports One and Big Fox. Now, what I don't know is if they have the contractual ability to re-air that on the Cowboy Channel or not. I just don't know the answer. We can look for those. We can find out if that's the case. But I do think you're going to see, I mean, I asked some of the powers that be, so is the American going to be approved? Teton Ridge owns Cowboy Channel. Everybody's sleeping in the same bed sheets now. You know, how does that work? And I hear that 25, it won't be the case, but there are conversations in 26 that the American would be approved. So you're dead on right, Kendra. I don't even think the people at the poker table know what card they're going to play, honestly, including the people that have big, big piles of chips. And part of the reason is some of those people with big piles of chips haven't been playing in our culture that long. And they should take note that we are homegrown. We like who we are. The reason that you're interested in us, everybody out there, is because we are real. We are a real original sport. We are real people that tell you like we think it. And by the way, that's why America loves us, right? Because our sport is real. So to answer the question, and that's interesting, Gary owning those two, and he's right. We could, but it's not as easy a roadmap, like you said, Kendra, as one may think, because I don't believe that the players know what cards they're going to play right now.
Well, and we also, you know, we know that the recent $1 billion, you know, shift where now the PBR is part of the portfolio of this, I don't even know, is it UFC, whatever, you know, the same people own, is it wrestling, big fighting? I don't follow those sorts of things, but some people are questioning, what is this going to mean to the actual Cowboys of the PBR moving forward? And I don't know. Is it going to be more of a show? I mean, I don't know.
I don't think so. I think that was a package in the deal. I don't think that that those level, the UFC type stuff even cares. So I don't think.
Archer from the original individual sport, you know, already. So
there's true, but you know, that leads into Team Rodeo, but you know, I will have to be the first to admit that I thought I had a chance to be involved with the team road, the team bull riding right up front. I could not see how it works. And it actually, it's going to end up replacing regular bull riding. That's what I think. So we'll see. So it was a good idea.
Let's keep rolling.
All right, from the 580, Fort Worth works for the teams for the Kid Rock Rodeo. Maybe it will help people understand how it all works. Maybe there'll be less confusion. There has been very little explanation on how the format works. I watched the qualifier. There was nothing said on who or what or how anybody was qualifying. Thanks for keeping the episodes coming. They are awesome and informative.
Well, this is a bigger topic. I think we should reserve kind of covering the teams, but here's some highlights to understand about what the PBR is trying to do. Oh, they're replicating, they think they can replicate their PBR team success in rodeo. They have a partner in Kid Rock. Those are the big things. It's head-to-head competition. That's different. It's one bronc rider against another bronc rider who's on a team. There are six teams in AT&T. There'll be two athletes in each of all the disciplines but bull riding. So if you go there, you're not going to see bull riding. Shocker, but no bull riding. It's just the other events. And I have a whole lot, you've got six teams, the Convoy, their head coach is Cody Ohl, the Jokers, Sid Steiner, low riders, Trevor Brazil. Misty Mountain Hop. That sounds like a strip club in North Carolina, but Misty Mountain Hop, Charmaine James, Sledgehammers, Fred Whitfield. And so here's what I understand to make this quick, and then we can talk about this in more detail. In November, nobody, I didn't know about it. They had a draft. I don't even know the rules of the draft. So the five teams drafted competitors. I understand the Sledgehammers got a lot of Trevor's guys over to their team. Don't even know how that works. Now, the WCRA team, I call it that, but the team that won it last year, that Bobby Motes, the head coach, they use their WCRA stuff to qualify, and they'll qualify via Corpus Christi. Now, I don't know if they qualify or how good they do. Bobby picks them. Again, we'll have to dig into that. But everybody has two players and they go head to head. And, the concept here is that the team things worked in bull riding and the team thing will work in rodeo. And they did it in the Winston Pro Tour days and it was pretty cool, but it was ahead of its time. So I think we could probably dedicate a whole episode, Kendra, to this. I don't know what comments you have on.
Last year, the WCRA's team, who did end up winning the Kid Rock Rodeo, they took the top two from Corpus Christi, which is a WCRA event down on the coast in May. So that was interesting. And I will also say this: I stumbled across after watching a bracket of San Antonio. I stumbled this weekend across a late night interview of Kid Rock, and here he came. And it was very unfortunate that the host opened with, why are you getting into the business of torturing animals? And I thought that was really unfortunate because, some people are like, this is so great, getting into the mainstream with his help. But then that's part of the mainstream media. So it was an unfortunate comment. Anyway.
Well, I'll end this with a prediction. Here's the deal. The Kid Rock's rodeo is on Friday, the day before Saturday. Well, Friday's days, but I mean, they do the Kid Rock Rodeo on Friday in AT&T, and then Saturday's their PBR big event. But you can go to Kid Rock N, the letter N, rodeo.com, KIDROCKN, rodeo.com. And you can look at the teams and their rosters, all except for the WCRA's one, and figure out, you can see. And I would make a prediction that looking at the roster, I would say Fred Whitfield's team's pretty stacked, right? Now, anything can happen in live when you're drawing animals and stuff, but the Sledgehammers are a pretty stacked team. And that's what makes team stuff pretty interesting, right? Is that if you start digging into that, you can look at the collection of athletes. It is interesting in the press release, and I'll end on this. The press release on this was, where was it at? Did I write it down? Holding, let's see, holding a combined 57 world championships and more than 470 national finals rodeo qualifications and more than 100 million in career option in career earnings, the drafted athletes will compete. So that's a pretty illustrious amount of competitors. Now they could be, a long time ago and maybe not in their prime, but there's some pretty big credentials in that lineup of drafted individuals.
And yet the non-seeded people are who won last year, sort of interesting. But
Very interesting. Very interesting. All right, what do you got, Greg?
I just wanted to remind everybody, if they got any feedback, they can text it to us at 817-668-2395 or email us at nospinrodeofeedback@gmail.com. And our last feedback is from Instagram, and it says, "Why are the steers so bad at Fort Worth and San Antonio? This does not make rodeo look good."
Okay, so I'd love to take this one because I called Matt Reeves, who's the timed event, one of two timed event directors on the PRCA board, about this. He's an NFR steer wrestler and Hayes is at the highest level also, has been at Fort Worth a lot this year. His opinion was that the steers at Fort Worth were actually good. They were just fresh. And handling fresh cattle is an art form of its own. He felt like a lot of guys got behind, and the steers only had three runs on them, and a lot of people didn't handle that as well as they should have. So he felt the steers were pretty good. As for San Antonio, his comment was that for the last 4 months, until maybe a week ago, the Mexican border's been shut, and we can't get cattle. And so he said at San Antonio, some of the steers were at San Antonio last year, and he said almost every steer there was either an NFR steer or an extra at the NFR. There is one pen, which is probably what people are calling out, that was kind of the leftovers because they needed more cattle than what they had just from the NFR, and so they put them all in one particular pen. I hate to use the term poison pen, but it's like he was kind of like, it is what it is. We have no access to cattle much, but they're older steers. He said it's also very difficult when you have two perfs in one day when you have these older cattle. It's pretty hard. The tricks really, show up. And but basically he was like, as far as San Antonio goes, this is all we have to work with right at this moment. So I'm happy to get these people answers that they're looking for, but this apparently is the fact. So
It's a reality, and that's good. That's just the reality of it. But you gotta, that's where the true in not all the cases, right, Kendra? Because you're very in tuned in that world. But the veterans can have an angle, right? Not on all the cattle. I mean, there's some cattle do, but they do. But we talked about the fact that the calf that goes hard right and Shad ropes him, right, and makes it a run. So that would be my question. These veterans, this is where your experience should pay off a little bit, or no?
And to me, like, super interesting talking about the cattle and like them being fresher at Fort Worth, and me mentioning, handling fresh cattle as an art form. People, again, to go along with the rest of the conversation today, the ongoing conversation, like, as rodeo, as our society evolves, rodeo used to be largely made up of ranch-raised cowboys, right? And they had horse and cattle sense from growing up in the saddle and working cattle all day, every day, and all that sort of thing. Well, I know guys like my dad used to love when fresh cattle showed up. Guys like Oat used to love when fresh cattle showed up because that was right in their wheelhouse. It's like, I bring them on, And then there are some people who just, I mean, there's more of an art form with the scoring and how you handle them, and it's a whole different ball game than old, trained, worn out cattle. But sometimes you deal with the fresh ones. I mean, look at Cheyenne when everybody wants a fresh one and they walk to the line the first round or whatever. That's a whole different event than by the time you get to the end of it. and they take off like bats out of hand. It's a whole different thing. So
it's what makes our sport interesting, I think. But you, and you make a point that the side that the variation of the rodeo, how it's progressed, and even in the size of the cattle and the type of cattle and everything, it's become a speed match now, not a durability contest. And that's changed. That's changed what affects, you know, what people think is a great run in the timed events. It absolutely does. Very
good. It's changed the definition of a great horse. It's changed the definition of, you know, it's like a lot of people will say, you know, the house that Joe built about Joe Beaver. Well, the fact that he was a rookie in 1985, the first year it was in Vegas, that was straight into his wheelhouse from where he grew up. It would have been completely different, maybe, had he been showing where he came from, taking that to the wide open spaces in Oklahoma City, totally different, you know? So it's an interesting conversation.
Well, that's interesting conversation, and leads into our next guest talking about revisiting the rules of professional rodeo, our point of view. Welcome to the show, our guest, Ron Howard, not the Ron Howard you think, but the new director of supervising officials. I don't know. What is the official title that you have, Ron?
It would be director of officials for the PRCA.
That's cool. Does it come with a crown and a retirement plan and all of that?
I think the crown you have to wear backwards, but yes, it gives me a retirement plan.
Well, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us, and congratulations on your new job. And I'm going to let Kendra visit with you a little bit while I load my 44, because I got a bunch of judging questions for you in a second. So I'm going to hand
Perfect.
It off to Kendra.
Thank you.
Well, I have two upfront questions. Do I understand correctly that you are from Montana, A, and B, that you started this new position on January 1st? Is that right?
Okay, well, the answer to the first question is actually I'm from Nebraska. I'm a Nebraska boy, and went to school in Colorado and did a lot of my career in Colorado, but I've lived in Montana for 5 years now in Red Lodge, which, as everybody knows, is a really great destination and a wonderful rodeo in the summer, and I've enjoyed it from way back in the day, and that's kind of was my retirement home, but I'm not retired, I guess.
Wow. They brought you back to the bench or what?
Sorry about that. I did start on January 2nd, so I drove down there on January 1st to start work.
Gotcha. Tell us about your rodeo background. Like what you got in, you know, where you're coming out of here to take this position.
Well, I rode bulls and bareback horses in high school, and then in college. Professionally, all I ever did was ride bulls, and that was my background with rodeo. And then after a few years, I kind of got hurt pretty bad and started looking at how I could still be involved in rodeo, and kind of transitioned over to the judging side and started doing a bunch of local kind of events, and that just segued, if that's the right word, transitioned into the PRCA, and I've been involved, I think, with the PRCA as a judge since about 1984, and like I said, rodeoed a little bit before that. So I did take a little time away from judging to work in the education field for a few years, and ended up retiring as an administrator, as the superintendent of schools, the last place in Nebraska, and then started judging again pretty much full-time in about 2017. And that brings us to now, actually.
Well, so I have to ask, like, before we get rolling into the, you know, hot seat questions from Tommy Joe, and I'm sure I'll jump in on that too, but judging is one of the most thankless jobs in the world. And so why have you decided to take on being at the helm of the hugest headache that we may have as a sport? Why?
Well, that's a very good question, Kendra. And, you know, I go back to when I first started judging, and it was such a challenge to learn. And you wanted to provide the best for everyone, and just be a part of that whole process. And there's probably nothing more rewarding than judging a rodeo through all the challenges, and it comes out the way that you would want it to, and that the way the contestants would want it. And it's such a, I don't know what the word is, but it just makes you feel so good that things went well. And I really felt like over the past number of years, our judging program for the PRCA has not gone in the direction that it needed to go. And I really felt like I could contribute and get involved as a director now that I've maybe got a little old, got a little older, maybe get away from the judging part of it, but transition into the administrative side of it, which I have a lot of background as an educator. And you know, it is a very big challenge, but, you know, I think we're all old cowboys and we want the best and we want to try our hardest. And I just think that's what we're going to try to do, is involve a lot of people and try to make things better for the PRCA and our judging program.
Right. Well, like fundamentally, like deciding who, there could be no like more important task than making sure it's a fair contest to where the best man wins, right? Deciding judges have everything to do with, you know, making sure that the right person, the most deserving people to get the money, right? I mean,
Most definitely, Kendra. But yes, I agree with you. And who we send is so important. And I think that's one of the things that we really have to work at, is ensuring that our guys as officials are prepared, that they know what they're doing, and that we send the best guys available to do these events. And that's one of the things that we're working on.
Okay. Well, I know Tommy Joe's chomping at the bit, but one thing that I would love to ask, if you were a professional bull rider, is how hard it is to learn. Okay, so I'm guessing that it is like you watch bull rides in slow motion because you did it at the highest level. And I go back to people like Ty Murray telling me that it took him a long time to feel the ride in slow motion, but once you do it a million times, you know. But so my question for you is, like, how hard was it for you as a high-level bull rider to learn in real time, for example, how to flag, you know, a flat fall in the steer wrestling or a crossfire on the team roping or whatever, like how hard that is to learn by being taught when you haven't done it yourself at the highest level?
Yes. And I think it really helps if you can surround yourself with people that can help teach you, mentor you. And it is repetition, lots and lots of runs, learning to be in the right position, being willing and able to make a call, standing by your calls. Those things are so important, and it's countless practices. You know, people nowadays that think they've watched some stuff on television and they can go judge, I don't think they really know what they're getting themselves into. And it's a craft just like riding is, and you really have to practice your craft. And position is so important, and integrity, I think. So hopefully I answered your question.
Well, I appreciate it, because to me, at the bottom, I mean, we go all the way back to the Cowboy Turtles, and it's like they were looking for a fair competition. And right. So this is like at the core of who we are as cowboys. So Tommy Joe, jump into what some of your questions.
Okay, Ron, what would you say coming into this position was your largest challenge as you were contemplating it? What do you think is the largest challenge in supervising the pro rodeo officials?
I think getting an opportunity to observe, critique, and rank our officials is really, really important. We've gotten to the point now from back in the days when I started till now, we've doubled the number of judges that we have. And I think not always have we prepared those guys to do the job that they need to do. So we have put in place some regional reps, but ultimately what we'd like to do is have a system where we've ranked our guys from top to bottom and make sure that we use those top guys where they need to be. So that is a really big challenge.
Yeah, that kind of goes into my next thing, and that is judges don't get paid a lot of money. So it seems to me that it would be really hard to have really qualified pro rodeo officials. If you look in other sports, officials are segregated and da-da-da-da-da, and I don't know what kind of money. Well, I actually looked up what kind of money they make. They don't make anything like the quarterback, but they make a good living.
Right.
And so my first question is that's got to be a challenge, because most of the judges that you see, they're judging because they can't do anything else in the sport, right?
Right. That's true. And I was like that myself, Tommy Joe, in the fact that my career was done and I wanted to still be a part. And I understand that. You know, there's a couple of things we need to do. We need to get a little younger in our judging program. We need to have people that are in shape and willing to work at their craft, both mentally and physically. Some physical fitness criteria would be pretty important, along with your knowledge. And I think we have to probably teach our seminars, our clinics, in a different form or fashion. And we've kind of started that process a little bit in the fact that we want to have people who are coming in to judging have some kind of background at another level. And then we teach them in the ways that we think the PRCA judging program is. And maybe the upper level people work in a different form or fashion on their craft, as opposed to everybody being in the same room, trying to learn the same stuff, you know, a little bit like the school teaching business. You know, sometimes if you've got some people up at the top end, they get bored pretty quick and don't want to pay any attention, and maybe we can direct more towards them. Another thing that we want to try to do is a learning management system that we're working through the American Paying Horse Association in Fort Worth, and we've kind of started it. In fact, Anthony's been a part of it to some extent. And it is a system where we can do a lot more, just like what we're doing right now on television or on the internet. It also eventually could be an avenue for our fans to learn more about, you know, you're sitting in your chair watching television and you see a mark in 89 at Fort Worth and you're like, Where in the world did that come from? I don't know enough about it, and I didn't see it. And, you know, there's quite a bit through this learning management system that we can use to educate our contestants about why calls are made the way that they're made, and our spectators. And those programs are used not only in other parts of the Western world for judging, but they're also used in the NFL and the NBA. So I think that's another avenue that we really need to look at. It might also help that if Ron Howard, the judge, is having problems with making a crossfire call because he's out of position and not seeing things correctly, maybe there's some things that we can do through that video to help him so he's getting the calls right. Because that's ultimately the goal.
Can I ask what the, like, if someone has never judged, what the minimum requirements are to judge a PRCA rodeo. As far as, I mean, there was a time when you could go to one very short judging seminar and you could start judging, at least at the lowest level, at the smallest rodeos. Is that still the case? What's the minimum requirement to be a PRCA judge?
Yeah, we've changed that since January to Kendra. We're going to start, our seminars start the middle of March. First thing that you had to do if you're a new person is you had to give me a resume of your background involved in judging, not in rodeo. So just because you were a really good bull rider doesn't really have anything to do with it. We want you to have gone somewhere else and got some experience. And then there's a background check where I start calling these people that this potential judge is listing as a reference. And from that point, then they're allowed, if we feel that they're ready for that, they're allowed to come to a beginning seminar, which I said our seminars are now changing a little bit in regard to who directing our education towards specific levels of judges. So a beginning judge could then come to a two-day seminar. And then from that point, they're evaluated by the teachers of the seminar and myself. And if we feel like they're ready for the next step, then they can go through a shadowing program. It could be a number of events where they're not judging, but they're there with competent judges who can help them. Our area reps would also be with them to work with them, mentoring and teaching. And then ultimately, we would like to put them in a position where they could judge an event, probably a smaller event, with someone that we really feel like is a good teacher, that has a lot of experience in our program. And then we'll start working towards turning them loose. So we're changing it pretty drastically from the days of I want to put in to judge and I paid my $100 and went to the seminar, so give me some rodeos to go judge. That, yeah, we're not doing it quite like that anymore.
Well, you can definitely tell from your leadership background, right, and navigating the waters of public education, that you have talents in organizing and communicating and teaching, which it's interesting. What I'm realizing is that the first level of this that you're keying into is the preparing them, teaching them. Right. But so I'll take it another level. You're an interesting one because you're a former bull rider. Correct me if I'm wrong here, because I could be way out of line. But it seems to me that in order to judge the difficulty of specifically a bronc, I actually think the bull riding difficulty is probably easier, but a bareback horse or a saddle bronc, if you competed a lot in timed events, it seems it would be harder to be able to judge the level of difficulty at rough stock than it would be for a former rough stock person to learn the rules, because the timed events are more rule-based. Now, there's a couple calls, the crossfire, now the laying on their side. There's a few of those that are, I don't know how you guys refer to them, but they're judgment calls, which is fair. Right. There's in every sport. But would you agree that it always worries me? Now, this, just take this as you want, but it worries me if I see the whole field of judges are old tie-down ropers.
Right.
And I'm just being honest.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think over the years, actually, you've probably seen a lot more riding event guys become judges and become very good flaggers. And it can sure work the other way. But just as you said, the degree of difficulty, the criteria that has to be followed for marking a bronc, writing down on a piece of paper what your mark is for that animal, there's a lot to all of that. The bull riding is a little different in the fact that it's a controlled ride. So basically you're judging the animal and then ranking your ride based on his control of that. So yeah. it's not as much of a spread as it could be the other way around in the horse riding. So yeah, there is a lot.
Do you think that if you look at some judges sheets at a high level event, do you think it's possible that one side of the arena, the animal and the contestant is 12 points less than the other side?
Well, I think I'd have a problem with that. 12 points is a lot. You know, unless it's maybe in the bronc riding where somebody got a gut hold and never turned a foot loose, and we're pretty similar on the horse, but the ride, you know, he could spur him on one side and not on the other. But back to your comment about 12 points difference, one thing that we really, really have to teach is our judges have to be in position to see what they need to see. And if they are not physically able to get to where they need to be, then it's probably time for them to do something else. And that is really, really important that there's some hustle, because it's pretty easy to stand in front of a buck and shoot and go, well, that's a 19 horse, and I think he made a 21 ride, but I didn't really ever see the spur ride. That's not a good thing.
Well, that's when they usually ask the other judge what he scored so they can figure out what they need to write down. But, you know, you're right. It's very interesting that you say positioning, because I think that's critical. And I think physical ability can do that. Also instinctive, you know, it's almost like a bull rider. Sometimes if you instinctively know where you need to be, because you understand that animal's turning to the left, he's going to circle around to the left. I mean, even when you're shoe bossing or running an arena like me, you learn pretty hard, you know, a minute before you need to get the hell out of the way, because there's a wreck coming.
Yeah.
Based on where the pickup men are. So I think that's really brilliant and interesting. So now I'm going to keep working at you a little bit here. Okay. Because I really love your responses. They've been really good. So we talked about those two things. Now, how accurate do you think, if you're in the right spot and you're a well-trained judge, do you think what would you say the percentage of getting the mark out rule correct? What's a good percentage of that?
I would say 95%.
So you think they should be, they can nail that if they're in the right spot, live and right in the moment every time, 95% of the time?
I sure do. Yes. Okay. I think the biggest thing is back to whether we're actually concentrating as officials for the start, and taking into effect whether there's any kind of foul, hesitation, whatever, and then positioning yourself so you're not looking through the gate on the hinge side, or too far away and too close to the fence on the latch side. Because if they, depending on how that animal steps out or bucks out of there, if you will, you know, it's all about where you are. With the new replay that we use at the finals, I think it's really important that if the judge feels as if it was not a mark out, he needs to throw his flag, because we can fix it. Because I was in the replay booth with Cliff Overstreet.
And yeah, but they got to throw the flag.
They got to throw the flag.
They can't be scared. Yep. They've got to believe that they've got support, not right. That they're being criticized.
Oh, you are exactly right. You are exactly right. And I think it's better now than it was a year ago. From what I understand, the numbers were in 2 years ago, but we've got work to do. And it's extremely important that if somebody's missed one out, if that's the rule, we need to get them, because we can sure change whether somebody won a world title or not based on whether we did our job. So, you know, and to give you an example, the way those buck and shoots are set up at the NFR, it's really important if you're on what would be the right side, the hen side on, oh, I don't know what those number of shoots are.
The left-hand deliveries, I think.
Where the left-hand deliveries are. You've got to really be out there and over farther, more towards the middle of the arena. And we really get in a bad habit of getting over there because we're afraid we're going to get cut off. And I think that really makes a difference as to the view that we get.
That's really good. What about the same question for the crossfire?
I think we've made that call better. I think when Rick was there with Caleb and those guys and worked on the crossfire change in our wording, I think that's helped. You're always going to have you're calling balls and strikes, yeah. If you will. And so there's always going to be some people that are going to disagree. I think the fact that we now say enter the loop or that the rope has touched the legs, that changes it quite a bit because it used to be extremely difficult to see when he released it. And that's not quite the same, but I think probably with markouts, with knockdowns, with crossfires, it's all about being consistent and having integrity, concentrating and being willing to make the call when you see it. And again, you know, if I'm flagging the team roping at the NFR and it's really close, I think I'm probably going to get them. And the reason that I say that is because we have instant replay and we have a lot of different views. So I don't think those judges should look at it as, oh my, I missed it. Let's do the best we can to make sure that contestant gets the right opportunity. And so does the others that are following him.
Well, and the nice thing, if they're consistent, like you said, in a rodeo, if it's consistent, the theory is the right person wins. If you're consistently this way or that way, then that's what's important. It's the non-consistency, right, when it rears its head that is cause for concern, right? I think you agree with me on that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Go ahead, Kendra.
I would something that's constantly hot on social media is fans really getting after some announcers for feeling like the announcers, you know, they're like, hey, judges are people and the announcers are going overboard and trying to influence the judges and trying to sell a perf. I would love to know from the, you know, director of judging's point of view. I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing. And if you watch any performance, it's like, well, you know, I've been in 1,000 production meetings and everybody loves to sell a perf and loves to sell an event, but how is there any factoring in any judging seminars about like not being sucked in emotionally when you're a judge, as far as different, all the things that happen, you know, okay, well, he needs to be 95 and, you know, 90 yeah. and a half to win this rodeo. And like, it would be so great for the crowd. And if you do 91, you know, yeah. or the old, you know, do certain people earn, or you know, the young guys, as long as I've lived, are like, so what's it going to take to where I get those extra 3 to 5 points because I'm a big name guy, you know, that yeah. kind of stuff. How do you keep yeah. the emotion and the human side? Judges are humans. How do you keep them from their emotions impacting the scores?
Well, I think first off, it's really important that we don't forget the first guy. You can't get caught up in the emotion of the crowd, of the announcer, of the rides progressing. If the first guy is supposed to be 95 and you made him 89 so that the last guy could be 95, we might have missed it. And
they don't do it that they don't mark. I don't think that they mark them because they're, I don't think they're concerned about the production. However, it's instinctive to be concerned to give yourself room.
Yeah.
If you're not overly confident, you got to be careful not to give yourself room, because the last thing you want to do is be the judge that had to mark someone 98 to win it.
But we can't have progressive judging either. You know, right. Sometimes if you just stay where you're supposed to be and look at the whole picture of things, and you have some experience and you're the right person for the job at that time, and we have the best person there, it's going to, generally speaking, take care of itself if they're doing their job with some integrity. And I don't know, I guess maybe because I'm an old judge, I want to think that's the way that it's supposed to be. But I do know that we can get caught up, and you've got to let go of that. You can't take those things into consideration. You just need to concentrate on your job for when that guy nods his head and be where you're supposed to be, so that you've done it 1,000 times, 10,000 times, and just make the call.
Yeah, but go ahead, Kendra.
You brought up pay, Tommy Joe. And so I don't know, Ron, if you're at liberty to say what, you know, different level, what the pay scale is on PRCA judges, you know, that's one question, whether or not you are. And then the other one is, I've been hearing lately talk of some non-sanctioned type situations drawing some of our judges away because they pay more. Are you experiencing any of that?
Very much so. Yeah. The pay at this point in time is tiered. The upper level officials get more money. The bottom level officials get as much as $150 a performance less. Personally, I'd like to see us pay everybody the same amount of money. And I think the office, Tom, Steve, those guys, I think they're good with that. And maybe through the ranking system, it takes care of itself. And what I mean by that is, if you're the best official, you're going to get the most events and therefore the most money. And if you're not at that level, we're going to teach you and work with you and give you an opportunity to grow, but you're not going to get to do the same number of events or a high level of events. But right now, when I'm doing assignments, I do have a number of people who put down for special considerations, I cannot do an event this week, because I'm going here or there or whatever, and it pays better. And as a reserve contestant official, not a full-time official, because that's a whole different story, but the reserve contestant officials, we, you know, that's their livelihood for some people, or a lot of their money that they make. And so we have to take that into consideration, and the right to work laws allow them to work other events. But, I'll be honest with you, even the college rodeos probably pay a little better than the PRCA rodeos right at this point in time. But we're working on changing that, making it better. So,
well, I don't know that. Again, I'm an advocate of tiering things, because I think that's very Trumpish of me, in that if you're the best, you should be rewarded. And that goes back, I want to go back to, there's some human nature in this that I don't think we'll ever take out, because that's the value of sport. And that is Patrick Mahomes. You read about it. We watched it. You know, there is some blessings when you put your mug on a mantle. There is. And you've earned some of those blessings, whether you like it or not. You've earned your way to the top. And I say to guys that say to me, well, old so-and-so, God bless. And I said, that's easy. Go get 6 buckles. You know, if you're that damn good, go win, and then you'll reap those rewards. I think there's some of that that's always going to happen. I think you nailed it on the first. We're talking about rough stock. And the nice thing about timed events is, with the exception of a handful of issues, these guys perform, and it's on a clock, and it's a documented performance. And as long as they follow the rules and the procedures correctly, they get their score, their times. But in the rough stock being subjective, you know, the first guy, you know, it's funny because technically speaking, how I set the buck order can also affect the results in rodeos. And you get these old time stock contractors that set the buck order. So what I do at my rodeos, to be honest with you, is we set a load order. We set a load order because I want those things loaded correctly. And then what I want is the contestants, you know, where they fall. And that's a mix and match. And I've had 100 producers come up to me and say, "You're kidding me. You bucked Stetson in the middle." Yeah, I did. I do that for a lot of reasons because I want the right guy to win. And I also think that it's important that the fans, that the non-educated fans see greatness early enough that they understand how everything else is scored.
Right.
You know, if you backload everything, then you never truly engage your fans into saying, "Wow, now that I think back at it, that guy deserved to win." So I think those are all, you know, you're really saying very interesting things, but I think there's a level of that, Kendra, that's going to happen, in human nature. And I don't think it's bad. I think it's raw, it's sport. I think there's atrocious things that happen that I've seen that are, sure, that were embarrassing. When it's embarrassing for people that are not judges, then, you know, you're like, ugh. Now we've got a million now judges that sit in their living rooms on Cowboy Channel and watch so much rodeo that they're pretty sure that they can judge. And I get that. And the problem, the hard part is that fans think they saw a good ride and they didn't. And I see negatives and cons, Kendra, to what you said about the announcers, but remember, there's two different kinds of announcers, in my opinion. There's spectacle announcers, and then in sports, there's analysts that aren't afraid to call out the obvious, even though it makes your game look worse.
Sure. Right? And I'm not, by the way, I'm not interjecting my own opinion. I'm just saying that there are certain announcers who get heckled continuously for people saying, "Well, why don't you get your judging card? Because you're trying to tell the judges what to do." And, you know, there are announcers. I'm talking about announcers who say, you know, "Well, if he's not your winner, I'll walk off this podium," you know, and all this kind of stuff. And it's all over social media all the time. We have got to address what's going on at the winter rodeos, because there are some things. I just wrote about it the other day, just because it was everywhere, all over the socials, about what in the world, especially with the steer wrestling. And my point to writing about it just was to say, before you cuss the flagger, the PRCA, or the committee, or whatever, I mean, like for Fort Worth, for example, and Ron, I'd love for you to weigh in here, is like some of these rodeos, and my understanding from one of the timed event directors is that this all started in Calgary, but Fort Worth isn't the only ones. Some of these rodeos are asking for special ground rules. And so, you know, this is part of the whole point of this point of view, is like, okay, we need to keep having this open conversation. All right. We've touched on the markout rule. Apparently that's on the table at some point, whether calves need to stay tied for 6 seconds. The steer wrestling is a very hot, you know, this clean fall thing. When this first hit at Fort Worth, people were going bonkers because they're like, "What the hell is the flagger was doing?" Well, the fact is, the flagger was doing what he was told. Correct.
You are exactly right. Yes, and I think we probably got to do a better job of teaching, if that's the right word, our crowd as to. You know, I was at Fort Worth when one of those calls was made about, basically, it's a humane issue, and he's dog-falled, and he's, you know, on his head pretty hard, trying to get him to roll out of it. And back in the day, that's what we did, but that was a ground rule, and we don't do that.
The thing about it is, I think it's really vital, as we talk also about announcers, how this all works together in a performance, as someone who grew up in California, but from, you know, back when it was the original cowboy capital, and now as we go and all the threat in LA and everything else, Matt Reeves, who's, you know, a timed event director on the board, I spoke to him at length on this because he helped write the Fort Worth ground rule
Right.
with the help of a lot of people, including judges and including cowboys and including all these people trying to make something that'll work for everybody. But I think that he had a really good point in saying, you know, he felt like at first maybe the announcers didn't understand that there was a special ground rule. And he felt really strongly that if they, instead of using like animal welfare, cruelty, things like that, if he would simply say, we have rules, you know, we're the professionals, we have a clean, a flat fall rule or a clean fall rule, I think is how he thought it would be
Good
best.
point.
Because I go to the other timed event rep on the board, Troy Pruitt, who has, you know, talked so much about, you know, jerk down rules over the years. And fair point, he was like, he felt strongly in his position because he's like, if the announcer presents it to the crowd that this is an animal welfare cruelty issue, then every soccer mom in the grandstands is looking for it, as opposed to if we word it differently, we don't call attention to issues that sometimes arise. And the other thing, TV is blowing our skirt up in a lot of areas on rodeo, and at Fort Worth, it's just how it happened. But some of the controversial steer wrestling calls in the early going, the cameraman, it was, in a way, it was cool. It was fun for people like me to watch, but they're zooming in on the judge, they're zooming in on the cowboy, and when they're kind of spatting, like, what the hell's going, what the hell, what about this call? And this is all, we can read lips, like, this was all front and center on our TV screens, which in a way was really fun to watch, but.
Yeah, but you want the announcers to know all the rules, but half of your contestants, Kendra, didn't know the rules. So that, you
That's
know,
correct. Correct.
and you earlier said, well, I can't stand these announcers that, you know,
No, no, no,
don't know
no,
the rules.
no, no, no. Shut you down right there. I said it's always all over social media that certain announcers get heckled nonstop. And you know
Okay.
it's true. That is
It's not
not my
you, the
saying it.
people that say that, but that's my point that I wanted to make real quick, and not targeting you, so don't get your stilettos out on me. But here's the deal. The right mix in true sports is color and commentary, right? And there are announcers out there that do a good job trying to educate our audience, right, about why a guy just won during the replay, or why this rule just happened. And they're diving deeper into what's going on, which is more sport-like. Tom Brady doesn't talk about it, doesn't try to get the fans to scream. He talks about the spin on the ball to the hash mark. You know, that some people are saying, I don't care. Mama sitting at the deal, she doesn't care that she's happy they scored a touchdown. But there are football enthusiasts, right, that have become football enthusiasts because they're understanding the rules. So I'm going to defend those announcers that take the time to say, see how his feet, how he hit the point of his weren't there on the front of that. Now, the risk you run on that, Kendra, is if you say those things on the mic, and the score comes in opposite, someone's an idiot.
Right.
You or the judges.
Right. You did miss my point. So I am not attacking announcers. I'm saying it's a constant hubbub on social media. So
And I didn't say you, I didn't mean to say you were attacking. I guess I'm attacking those that are attacking them, in that, just like Ron said, the more detail that we give our fans, the more educated fans they'll be, and the more passionate they'll be.
Well,
Right?
I
That's
totally agree,
what I'm
and
getting.
that's been my job for almost 40 years now. It's like the more you get to know these people and the more you get to know our way of life, it's so endearing. You know,
Yeah.
it's truth is absolutely in our favor, you know. And so absolutely true, but my understanding from talking to different, you know, committee people, board members, is that, and Ron, I'd love for whatever you can enlighten us, you know, on this, is like he was telling me that you know there are a lot of rules that are being brought up, and it's certainly not just one committee. It's like Fort Worth, Houston, Calgary. He said Calgary was the first to have some of these special rules. I don't know if that's correct, but that's what he told me.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And so now some of these others are asking for it, and there's the old, you know, push and pull, tug of war, you know, okay, it took us a very long time to come up with this rule book, let's respect it. And then, you know, certain committees in urban hotbeds discovering that in 2025, when kids think eggs come from the grocery store instead of a chicken, that they might have to massage the rules slightly. And the first thing every, you know, old timer wants to do is go for the jugular on anything that's not pure. And I understand that. But on the flip side, if you're in an urban center, some people are trying to compromise here to keep rodeo thriving in these urban centers in 2025.
Don't you guys think that to some extent rodeo, now that it's on TV so much, has grown to the point where we're kind of in the same, whatever the word is that I'm looking for, like, you know how the NFL or the NBA or whoever changes their rules to meet the kickoff in the NFL, you know, because of the fact that so many people got hurt running a kickoff back. Now they do that completely different. I think my point is, I don't think that rodeo's any different. I think as we evolve, the people that go back a long ways are going to say, why are we changing these things? But we're changing it to meet the demands of a modern society that does not want to see calves get jerked down, steers heads being twisted on too much, whatever, you know, whatever, there's a number of them. And so we've started the process of having some rules that potentially could get passed that changes some of that. And I don't know that change is hard for people, but sometimes change is good. And we're just trying to make our sport better for the public, for our contestants, for our animals. And ultimately, in my mind, I think that's a win-win, just as it has been changed in other sports. So I don't know. That's my take on it.
I feel like compromise, we're at a point where we're going to have to do some compromising. And from the Cowboys' point of view, they're not always dead set against change, but there are little caveats. As you well know, it's like, if the cattle are prepared correctly, we have no issue with it. Well, then Joe Bob, Big and String stock contractor, Tommy Joe, shows up with some, you know, he's matched 8 different herds together, and there's a foot difference in you know, how tall the steers are, and some of them are from last year, and some of them are fresh, and that's sure. Frustration from the Cowboys' point of view.
Sure.
Yeah, I think I'll give you a point, an example. So to answer your question, Kendra, there's a group of the top 12 rodeos that, encouraged by the PRCA, are meeting together in a developmental role to discuss the issues that face the larger markets. So that's where this is coming from. And I've been a part of those with our rodeo and the discussions, and they're very good discussions. Now, in those particular meetings, I have to be the alternate voice. As you know, I always try to argue. But, you know, it's not just as easy as, well, we should just eliminate the markout rule. Okay, that's not that. I mean, now, but you start to ask yourself, does the markout rule have to be a no score? I mean, these are things, parts of this compromise. Does it really have to be a no score, or can it be a penalty to the point where that guy cheated enough and he got docked enough? Right. And the guy that kept him up there, it was rewarded enough. And then the broader audience doesn't even really know that there was a penalty, or they could, you know, they could ask, hey, why was that guy 15 points less? Well, it's because he missed the markout. And the announcers could do that. But I want to give you a specific example that I think is important to this conversation. The Utah Days of 47 Rodeo. When I took it over, we did one PRCA, the 6-second calf rope and tie down. Then we made a change and we went to essentially 3 seconds. As soon as the guy ties the calf, throws his hands up, that calf is untied in 3 seconds, about the time that the guy gets to the horse, which, by the way, took 4 days of training the untiers. Okay. Because this is important. They have to do their job correctly so that the cowboy doesn't spook us. There's a lot to this. But let me get you this. We went from 376 negative emails to zero, right? In that one simple rule change. And calves weren't on the ground as long, Kendra. The calves were getting up with more air. And this is perception as reality. These calves were jumping up, right? Because they hadn't been on ground quite as long. And we're much more aggressively running out of the arena. And all of that paints a bigger picture to where that the fans might really realize that this isn't as bad as we've been reading down our rabbit hole on social media. So I think you're right, Kendra. A compromise and a talk through the contestants and the committees is exactly what we're doing. And I think what we need to continue to do.
Oh, and on the evolution spectrum, you know, it is a different deal. Guys like Dean Oliver, who used to step on off the left, the monsters that they used to, you know, rope for calves, you know, sure. If they didn't have a frap factor, they were, I mean, 16 seconds, one go rounds, plenty of places, you know, and now a guy like Dean Oliver would consider what we're roping today to be goats. So, I mean, it's true.
It's absolutely
true. So, you know, which adds to the first time rodeo soccer mom going, oh, look at the little babies. So, hey, it all changes. I mean, so maybe that's, it's a bit much bigger factor. You know, when we used to see guys get their shirts torn off at Salinas, we're not seeing that now. So this all is part of the conversation. I mean, it's not, a lot of things aren't what they used to be. So we have to keep changing with the times a little bit. Fair.
And I don't think that we, you know, the intent here isn't to resolve anything. It's just to have conversation about it. But I've got one last thing that I'd like to ask Ron, and then Kendra, you can ask one last thing. I'm going to tell you what I think should happen. And then I'm going to say, what say you, Ron? Okay.
Okay.
It seems to me that the PRCA, without a question, should provide a replay judge and the technology for the top 12 rodeo events in 2026 under the same circumstances of the NFR. And that is, there's a very well-trained official that's watching every run, every markout, everything, and can call for an under review if they see something that an official on the ground missed. And I don't think that the PRCA rodeo should pay for that, because I think the PRCA's job is to represent the cowboys and get the right guy at the NFR. So what I'm proposing is, in 26, we got a year, the top 12 rodeos have replay based on the really good, strong data and work that the PRCA's put in at the NFR. And at the expense of the PRCA, that those rodeos that actually do push a guy 14 points up a leaderboard, that what, since the technology exists and since we've spent time in figuring out how to refine it, it should be used at those rodeos. What say you, Ron? And you can say no comment.
Oh, heavens. I want to comment. I think your idea is wonderful. I think probably the biggest thing, Tommy Joe, is coming up with as we've talked about, the judges don't get paid very well, and the budget for the judging program is a deficit to the PRCA. I think we have to change how we look at that and maybe come up with ways that we can implement things to pay for our judges more, and it would be the same thing with those top 12 rodeos. The cost is a lot. And so if it's going to be something that the PRCA is going to pay, you know, it probably would require us formulating some committees, with some innovative people to come up with some ways, sponsorship, whatever it is, to help pay for that. But, you know, I think it worked at the NFR. I think it will continue to grow and change and get better. And I don't understand or don't see why we can't do that with some of these great big rodeos that we have. I think it would ensure, like you said, that maybe the right people won in instances and took away some of the judgment calls that maybe have caused some problems in the past. So I'm all for it. I don't have any problems with that. Let's go. Let's get her done.
If they want you to improve the judging plan, then the rodeos, the committees, and the PRCA need to put their heads together and communicate how to give the judging program the assets it's needed to make the changes that it needs.
Yeah.
And we should collectively work to figure out, because it seems to me if there's a place for a budget, it's in the judging, right? Yeah. If you're gonna look at cutting something, it shouldn't be how you crown your world champions for 600 rodeos.
Right, right. You know, I don't think the other sports in the United States say, well, our judging program is run at in the red, the NFL or whatever. I think it's how we look at it. And then coming up with some, like you said, some innovative ways to pay for that. If you're working out there in the regular world and you haven't seen a pay raise since 2008, that's pretty tough to take. And that's where our judges are. You know, a lot of places, they don't even get their own rooms. You have to pay for your own room and you haven't had a raise since 2008. That's
really tough. Hard to track, not less hold on to good people if you're never giving a raise. And I hope that I hope for one thing that it would never be tempting for the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association to, like, for example, well, we'll just add every time you enter a rodeo, we'll just add another fee to the Cowboys to pay for it. I hope that won't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I hope that based on the past and based on social media sending sparks flying all the time, that it would be considered, for one, a judging program is never intended for a professional sport to be a money source, right? So, but I hope that they'll think twice in this day and age. It used to be the Wrangler Pro Officials, just as an example.
Right.
That I hope that if there are sponsorships, they will either be things that would never sponsor Cowboys, or
right,
it would be sponsorships. It would be taken out of the general fund, such that the social media couch quarterback jackasses that are all over the place will not be tempted. We won't give them fuel to say, well, you know, Stetson Wright just won the world because it's the Wrangler Pro Officials and he's right, the Wrangler guy, and the cinch right guy got screwed. Let's just not even allow that to be part of the conversation if there's any way we could.
Good point.
From the past. But anyway, I would love to ask one last thing, because I don't know if it's even a fair ask. Is it possible for one person to be a great judge in every event? Is kind of, you know, my question. And well, you may say it is, you know, or is it possible that at these seminars and stuff that people should be, you know, how, like, when I'm a kid, like, the Cowboys picked, for example, Reg Camarillo to flag the team repping at the NFR. He'd been there a bunch of times, and that's who the team reppers picked or whatever. And I know that we can't always, at all these rodeos, we can't have a judge for every event. It's not practical. I get it. Is it possible that, you know, certain people get to be known for being really good at events? I mean, you know, Alan Jordan flagged the Bulldog in at the NFR for a long time. Harry Rose, you know, flagged the team up at Salinas for as long as I can remember. Is it possible that we should, like, okay, this guy specializes in these three or four events? Or, you know, would that be easier to try to get really the highest level expertise going rather than trying to get everybody to be pretty good at all the events? I don't know.
I agree with you, Kendra, and both Tom and Steve and I, and a lot of our judges have had the discussions that you're talking about right there. I'm not so sure that because you're a pro official and you're one of the 12 guys, you get to do the NFR. I think there should be a ranking system in place, and if Ron Howard, well, I'm just throwing my name because I don't judge anymore, but is the best bronc riding official, and whether he's a full-timer or not, he had the best year, just like the head official at the Super Bowl or whatever, he's chosen. That's his job. He's going to be one of the bronc riding officials. And same thing with flagging. I think ultimately, probably at those big rodeos, you probably need to have more officials and have those guys that fit their specific strengths doing those events. Because you're right. You can be well-rounded, but to be extremely strong in every event, that's a pretty special person. And there's some of them, but there's not very many of them. So I think what a better way to reward our officials who work so hard year-round. If they're observed and evaluated and you're the best, you should get to go do the best, in my mind. So
yeah, and take some of those raises from Vegas and make that the pot of gold for those judges to get there. And when they do get there, maybe they can pay off some feed bills at the end of it. And because they worked hard to be the best. I love that idea. I think, Kendra, definitely. These are just ideas, and we know that. Well, we've probably went too long, but I just want to say thank you for being willing to come onto our show. Thank you for talking so candidly about everything. Our goals here are always just to open up conversation and to clarify and to get our listeners kind of a different point of view on situations. And I think we've really accomplished that today. So I just want to
thank you. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it very much.
Do you want to have any last words, Kendra, or are we good there?
I've hogged enough of the conversation, but I really appreciate the open conversation. And that is, you guys at the PRCA, to be willing to do that is appreciated by us all. Thank you.
Oh, good. And you guys are doing a good job out there getting the word out with what you're doing with your podcast. So kudos to you guys. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Have a good day. Thanks for taking all this time to be with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, Kendra, I know I made you angry. I didn't mean to, so I apologize if I made you angry. I really wasn't pointing at you, but I do get frustrated with the social media people that I like to see commentation that talks about specifics. I'll put it that way. That's my personal. I like that. I like to see announcers that are able to not only enlighten the crowd, but also take them to a peak of emotion at the same time, because I think that makes better fans. The more they know about the sport, whenever we first started working in IndyCar, I didn't even know which direction a car went. And by the end, I understood, and I think I've said this, that those tires touch, these guys die. And again, I just was not a fan. I didn't know. And the more our fans are educated, I think the better off they are. So I apologize if I ruffled your
it was mistake the fact that I was saying that this is a chronic problem on social media for it being my opinion. That's two different things. And for the record, I've been in the professional media world in rodeo for nearly 40 years, and no one gets more of the teeth grinding frustration and annoyance than me about social media, for the love of God.
I'm with you.
There are great things that come out of it. And then there are just, anybody and everybody can just throw it out there, and people say and do things that they would never do if they were in the same room. They'd be killed.
Absolutely. I agree. They're very, very bold, as we've said, behind an iPhone. But that wraps up episode 48. It was a long one. If you made it to the end, congratulations. If you needed to stop it and restart it, congratulations. Thank you, Kendra. Thank you, Greg. This is a good one. This is a very good one. So we hope that you learned something new. I know I did, Kendra. What about you and Greg?
We'll never get to the bottom of the conversation about rodeo, ever.
That's good. That gives us content. Well, thank you all. Be safe. Be kind. Remember, God, family, and friends in that order. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time.